Now it's time for our weekly chat with Labor MP Andrew Little.
Obviously, they give a readout of the New Zealand public at a point in time, which is what this is. I guess from our point of view, we tend to look at movements and changes, and the reality is you have to look at them over time. And this is the first re-poll done in roughly a year. There has been quite a marked change, and that change is outside the sort of marginal sort of change. So there has been a shift, clearly. I think that does show that, and it's encouraging, that's positive. It's certainly, for those who are on the kind of the winning end of the poll numbers, it certainly gives you a psychological boost. And I know from bitter experience, but if you're on the other side, it can be a pretty depressing experience.
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, as you said, the numbers that were produced were positive for Labour. What intricacies of kind of like these polls, though, do you think it's important to remember when looking at these released polls, like sample size, etc.?
Yeah, no, I don't think sample size is a problem. There's a methodology that goes with it, and the polling companies have, there's a kind of an industry standard about making sure that the returns are properly weighted. So in order to get that poll sample of 1,000 or just over 1,000, they'll actually probably have made close to 2,500, even 3,000 calls to make sure that the actual poll sample that they draw the numbers from have the proper proportion of rural voters and metropolitan voters, Māori, non-Māori, other ethnicities, all that sort of stuff. So it'd be a properly weighted sample. I guess the thing to bear in mind is these things do have a margin of error, so it can be 3-3.5%, bear that in mind, which is why it's changes from one poll to the next over a period of time that are the most important thing to look out for. Where you see a dramatic change, where that change is outside that 3-3.5% margin of error, then you know there has been an actual shift one way or another, and that's what we saw in this poll.
Do decisions ever get fully made based on the back of polling numbers?
They are a factor that gets taken into account. Again, I think it's what happens over a period of time. And I think if there is if there's an ongoing declining trend, then you've got to, at some point, say, this is not going the right way. And you explore the reasons for that. Sometimes it can be explained. Sometimes it can't. And so you use it for those particular reasons. But equally, there's a lot of intuition involved. There's a lot of your own readouts and feedback that you get for all MPs just in their engagement and exchanges with the communities that they're a part of. So it's a factor. I guess the difference with polls is that there's an element of science to it. They get big headlines and a lot of media coverage. And there is one sense in which a story about a poll is kind of seen a sense amongst others. So people are reading about it or hearing about it or seeing it think, oh, so that's what's happening, and adjust their views accordingly. And there's a self-fulfilling prophecy aspect to it, if you're not careful.
So Parliament returned this week. What does that mean for you and for just generally how the government works? Because we see headlines about politics over the course of summer still, but now Parliament is officially back. So what difference does that make?
Well, I mean, we go through kind of the ceremonial and more routine things. So we have a thing called the Prime Minister's Statement, which is the first item debated each year. It's been debated this week. That means that the process of lawmaking resumes, and also that the process of examining government departments, their financial performance, whether they're actually achieving what they set out to do, and the scrutiny of law as well. We saw, and that's why I think the incident yesterday when a select committee was due to meet and some people didn't turn up on time and the National Party walked away from it, collapsed that select committee meeting. There was a whole bunch of government departments lined up to be examined and quizzed and interrogated about their financial performance. That didn't happen, which is unfortunate because that's a very important accountability process.
So the reports of that, there were comments made about people needing to get out of bed and actually do their job in relation to that. Was that just a sensationalized version of what happened, or was that genuinely people just didn't show up for it?
No, what happened was a regular member of the committee was unwell, was unable to make it, had called in to say he was unable to make it. Then it's the job of that's a Labor Party member, it's the job of the Labor Party to then find a substitute, and it took a while for the substitute to be arranged and to get to the meeting. They were a few minutes late, but the National Party MPs on the committee decided that they weren't there at the start time, therefore they weren't going to participate. That collapsed the quorum, so the meeting couldn't start, so it didn't. And what it meant was, and they had a meeting, the meeting was scheduled to go from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m., so because there's a lot to do, so a whole lot of government department lining up ready to be cross-examined and interrogated about their performance. That didn't happen. That all have to be rescheduled. So I kind of get the point about punctuality and making sure the numbers are there, but I don't think it justifies the level of inconvenience that has now been caused.
Certainly. Do you think that shows anything about Nationals' willingness to participate cross-party or cross-floor?
Oh, I think there's a point at which I think they think that if they can give the appearance of the odd bit of chaos here and there, the lack of organisation, that somehow makes them look good. I don't think it's a particularly good way to approach the job that MPs have of providing scrutiny and accountability. I get the political point scoring, I get that point, but in the end, there's other important aspects to the job that you expect the responsibilities to be discharged. And it was a political gesture. It allowed them to make a point later in the afternoon in Parliament that, you know, the government to sleep on the job, all that sort of stuff. But that's what it was about.
Yeah, that feeds quite nicely into my next point, kind of talking about scrutiny and political point-making and optics. Again, looking at the reports back from the opening days of Parliament, there was kind of like a predominant focus on, I would say, two members of Parliament, those being opposition leader Bridges and the deputy leader of the coalition, Minister Peters. And their interactions, it was described kind of by some sources as jibes and jeers. Obviously, you can't talk for Mr. Peters. However, why do you think, and this isn't limited to New Zealand Parliament or to politicians within the Parliament itself, but why do you think that many feel the need to level their critique of opposition at basic insults, like I would perhaps suggest was done on the opening day of Parliament?
I mean, at the heart of the day-to-day conduct of people, the politicians, and it is deeply psychological. So, and I think from the media's point of view, Gallery, they got to report every twist and turn every day. And one of the things they report on are the kind of interpersonal exchanges between politicians when they are performing their job, you know, particularly in Parliament. Winston Peters and Simon Bridges have a bit of history. Simon Bridges took over the seat of Tauranga, which was once upon a time Winston Peters' seat. So they know each other from there. So the media is always looking for that bit of frisson between those two. You've also got the most seasoned politician in Parliament, and Winston Peters. He's been around a long time. He is very canny. He is, in my view, very astute. He is very good sort of finger on the pulse, if you like. And you've got Simon Bridges. Simon's been in Parliament a few years. You know, he's the younger of two of them. He is making his way as leader of the opposition, leader of the National Party, still very early in that role. And I think the media sort of looks at these two and becomes an interesting story. But, you know, politics is a game of passion. It is about ideas, and hopefully it's about ambition for the country. But it's that clash of ideas and clash of passions that is what makes it sort of newsworthy and interesting. And in the seed of those sort of interpersonal conflicts, you get a narrative about the competing ideas and policies that go to make up government. And that's what I think, that's what feeds the stories, that's what makes it interesting to a lot of people, makes it dead boring to a lot of others. But that's why, you know, you get the headlines and the stories that you do.
I'm not saying that the behaviour is to catch headlines, but as you said earlier, the National Party used the walkout of the committee meeting to essentially score points. But do you think that actions should be chosen based on what grabs headlines? Is it an important thing that needs to be part of politics?
Yeah, well, I guess the thing is that it's partly for internal consumption, but also for your party support, your voter support base, is that, you know, your supporters want to see that you're doing stuff and you're in the media and that you're making the point. So, you know, politicians are looking for opportunities to show that they're on the job, they're doing things, that they have a few ideas that might be useful, and so those sorts of things happen. And then because in Parliament, in the parliamentary precinct, when Parliament is sitting, everybody's here, and you've got a dedicated press gallery following what Parliament does. So there's a whole sort of mishmash of things that come together that can elevate things to a level of significance that actually on close examination, they probably don't justify. But that's just the nature of the day-to-day operating of 120 people, very passionate about what they do, very committed and dedicated to what they do, along with, you know, 30 or 40 journalists following their every move. Look, there'll be any number of politicians who wake up every day thinking, all right, I've got this great thing I'm going to say or this great thing I'm going to do and I'll get lots of coverage and nothing ever happens. And then, you know, the most incidental of things happens and it, you know, turns into a big story. That's the nature of it. When I said before about politics being a game of psychology. It's also a confidence game, and there's a constant thing about, particularly in opposition, keeping your side of the house buoyed up, feeling confident, being able to do the job of taking on the government and challenge the government of the day. And it is very hard for the government. Obviously, you want to keep your side of the house buoyed up too, which is a lot easier to do when you're in government, in power, you're making decisions that make a real difference.
Do you think that you can gain that same amount of confidence by levelling legitimate political critique of policy and legislation at the opposition, or is it just an easier fix to play against what may be seen as obvious weaknesses? Like we see with President Trump, there's a large portion of people that level their criticism at him being old, having thin hair and small hands, when perhaps there's actually a lot more that can be done to criticize him in his policy, which would be more productive for the government and the public that they represent.
Yeah, I think the public has an appetite for two things. Of course, they want to see serious issues being seriously debated and good solutions put up for it. And I think most people agree, for a lot of complex problems, there's no one single answer, but they do want to see a good debate about it. But equally, and because this is a day-to-day thing, people are, and basic human nature, that you do want to look for the odd point of humour and the odd point of levity. And while I think we all take our job seriously, we've got to be careful we don't take ourselves too seriously, and that we can laugh at ourselves, that we can, when things are going well, we don't kind of get over the top about it. When things are going badly, we don't kind of beat ourselves up about it to the point where we just don't do anything anymore. So I think it's about ensuring that public debate over important policy and political issues isn't devoid of humanity and the wave of emotions that goes with all those sorts of things. And I just think that the day-to-day record of politics and the conduct of politics ends up recording all those.
That was Labour MP Andrew Little. The Wire.